Sweet dreams are made of these. Who are you to disagree? It's the Bitter End Podcast, and we're back for season fucking five.
You voted for it. You are now going to have to fucking listen to it. This is me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
Watching A Nightmare on Elm Street for all of y'all.
I'm so excited about this.
Dream, baby, dream. Is this a beautiful dream or a beautiful nightmare? No, that's not how it goes.
Yeah, that's close enough. We're going to wipe out all of our dream references very early on in this podcast, aren't we?
Thanks for listening even this far. So, for the uninitiated, this is the Bitter End Podcast, where me and Tom pick a franchise, this particular time voted for by you guys. We are going to watch each and every one of these films and review them for you and talk about where they're good, where they're bad, where they could be improved, where they could not be improved.
Where they do not make a blind bit of sense.
And I feel like there is a fair bit of that coming down the pipe from our boy Wes Craven, from our boy Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
The gang is all here. For this one, the very first episode, where we are going to be watching the 1984 original movie, A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, yes. I don't know why, but I just feel like we're just going to have a really nice time this season. I'm sure that that will not be true, because every season has, you have that many films, something's going to come up and fluster you and ruffle your feathers. But I think at least for this first film, I think we're going to have a nice time.
I think so. So if you are one of the listeners who likes to watch these movies along with us, just to quickly recap, the ground we're going to cover episode by episode. We're obviously starting with the original, A Nightmare on Elm Street. This is followed by A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge.
Of course.
Strong title. Followed by A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Nice.
Then A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. Not one I've heard of before. Then A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child.
Okay, these all sound like prog bands.
Yeah, they're going very heavy with the dream shit.
Yeah.
Then comes Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
Or will it be?
No, it will fucking not, because then it's Wes Craven's new nightmare.
Nice. Okay, I mean, just put new in there. That just clarifies everything. That's fine.
And then it's deja vu all over again, baby, with Freddy versus Jason.
Okay.
Which we'll be rewatching. And then finally, the Michael Bay-produced remake of the original A Nightmare on Elm Street.
What a journey we are going to be on. Like, I've seen the original, the first one that we're about to watch. I've seen this before.
As have I, Tom.
I haven't seen any of the other ones.
I've seen the second one once.
Okay. Now, I know that the first one is going to be a lot of, like, it's a classic. That is
banging.
Like, it is as stone cold, like, horror classic as you like. I have heard reports from, like, other friends who've been like, yeah, watch another one of the Nightmare on Elm Street the other night. Fuck me, it was shit. So I have no, but I'm going to reserve judgment until I see it on the screen, see what Big Fred is going to serve up for us each time. Now, we watched the trailer. I know we've watched these before. We watched the trailer to get in the mindset. It's what we do here at the Bitter End. How were these films being pitched to the viewing public at time of release? It's a good trailer.
I was not as impressed as I wanted to be. I thought the best bit about the trailer was the music.
The music was tight.
I think it might be Charles Bernstein, I think, is the guy writing it. And it's just really pumping, like discordant, like... I also get that if this is introducing the character of Freddy Krueger, you're in a tight spot with the trailer, right? How much of him can you show?
Well, they say that, like, that something is stalking the people of Elm Street. They're not saying someone. They're not saying Freddy Krueger, because Freddy Krueger isn't, like, now, like he's, like, a pop culture icon, isn't he? Like, he's...
I mean, he's showing up in The Simpsons.
Yeah, like, people know he's much like Jason Voorhees. People know who that character is without having ever had to have seen one of the films, because it's really just like bled into like the public consciousness. But this is like the trailers before anyone has seen him, so they're teasing it. Like you get him in the shadow, you don't get the full-on reveal, like the face, like the iconic face. You see the stripy jumper, you got the hat, you got the razor glove.
Yeah.
That's all in there, but they can't go, I guess, like, in hindsight, because we know what Freddy Krueger is and what this film is, you're expecting the trailer to be kind of like, it's Freddy Krueger, and just kind of leave it all out there.
He's back, baby!
Because we know, watching it, like, now, in 2016, at time of recording, we know who he is. But in 1984, this is just another horror film from the late, great Wes Craven.
Yes, and that's a really interesting point, because in the voiceover on the trailer, they make a point of saying, from the mind of Wes Craven, the man who brought you Last House on the Left and The Hills Have Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely am all about The Hills Have Eyes. I'm not so hot on Last House on the Left, I think it's okay, but The Hills Have Eyes is so up my street. And for some reason, weirdly, it hadn't even twigged to me that he made that movie before this one.
Mm.
Like, that's fucking bonkers. And I can really see myself at the time, had I been cinema-going age in 1984 instead of 1 year old, I would have been really, really, like, keen for whatever else was coming from Wes Craven at this point. And so excited, I don't know, just to not know what it was going to be. Like, who is this guy in this jumper running around? So I think I was maybe a little harsh on the trailer, like you said, because I'm coming at it from the future, man. That's not the trailer's fault.
We're living in the future, baby.
Yeah, that's not the trailer's fault.
Freddy Krueger has already happened. But other than that, like, it's just, it's a very teasery horror trailer.
A little bit of young Johnny Depp's face with his crazy quiff.
Yeah, yeah, Johnny Depp before he just went and fucking ruined everything. Like, the world. I'm not a big fan of his latter work or lifestyle choices.
Oi, Depo. Fucked it.
Oi, Depo. Fucking do one, mate. Get to fuck, you shit.
Fighting talk from Tommy D there.
I know. Yeah, mate. Don't smuggle dogs into Australia or whatever it was you did. You fucking tit.
Depo. You're just going to be like sat on the sofa while we watch the film just heckling him. Depo.
He's going to be so annoyed when he listens to this podcast, which I'm 100% sure that he follows us. Anyway, that is a sign that we've definitely veered far too off track and that we should just go and watch this film. But Todd, you're giving me a look that says, Tom, you've forgotten something really important, you stupid shit. This is season 5 and you should know this by now.
We have to do the IMDb guessing game.
I should know this by now.
Close your eyes and go to sleep, Tom, because I'm going to weave you a beautiful dream. The year is 1984. A movie is released onto an unsuspecting cinema-going public. It is A Nightmare on Elm Street, directed by Wes Craven. How has the internet responded? On a scale of 1 to 10 decimal points allowed, in the forum that we know and love of imdb.com, how would they rate a movie such as this?
Well, we discussed before that horror never really rates super high, but this is a classic.
I feel like this is a horror film that even non-horror fans are going to be like, yeah, fair play.
So, I mean, this is going to be the highest of the lot. I mean, with all franchises, it's always like the first one that really kind of rocks it. I'm gonna go big. I'm gonna go like 7.2.
Mate.
Yeah.
You did not go big enough. 7.5.
Oh, nice one, Wes.
That's a big un, right?
That is a big un. Is that like, that's gotta be like one of the highest rated films that we've watched. I
really
think.
Feel like it must be. I don't have the time nor the inclination to go back and check every IMDb.
I'm just gonna say that it is.
It bloody wants to be.
I think it probably is, because I don't know if you've noticed, but most of the films we've watched for this podcast are shit.
I don't know.
or at least sort of critically shit.
Let's just say if more people had voted for Air Bud, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation.
Indeed. You missed out, Air Bud fans. So now, with the IMDb guessing game put to bed, can we just go and watch this film?
Oh, please, oh, please, oh, please.
Let's do it.
It's a nightmare. Oh, it's a nightmare.
Oh, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, you're not wrong, sir.
It's a nightmare.
Nightmare.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to get a frame of reference for that, just watch the credits.
Oh, my God, guys.
It's a pumping song in the end credits of that film.
It is a film so good, they had a song written that has the name of the film in the song. That's how you know a film is good.
That's how you know what's up. And also, I'm just going to say, the rest of the music in this whole film was pretty on point. The score was great.
The Charles Bernstein score, it is so, so, so good. It is the kind of score that, it's however many years old now, 94, 2004. Wait, it's 32 years old now.
What?
It sounds like so many things that are coming out now that proper musicians are doing, actual pop artists still sort of doing stuff that sounds like this. It's so on point, bruh.
Yeah. And you know what else is really good?
What?
Just the film.
Oh, man. Not all of it. Admittedly.
No. I mean, I think there's elements of it that have dated, with the Freddy Nightmare Dreamy sequences. Mm. Some of those things still really look really good.
Yeah.
And other bits look a little bit hokey now.
And it's weirdly, it's not the effects I'm interested in, right? I think there's, obviously, we'll get into it when we sort of talk through the plot. But the bits that I think are the most effective are some of the more low-key nuances of what Freddy does are some of the things that really, really stick with me.
Yeah.
But he's good.
He's good.
The story's good. The cast in general is pretty good.
Yeah, I think there is some definitely in there some suspect 80s horror movie acting, but it kind of works for me, especially that there's this whole element of being really sleep deprived. So I think that you can be maybe it's not the best performance, but in some way I think it kind of works in that kind of if you haven't slept for 7 days, you would seem like you were acting really weird anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And the actor that you're talking about there is, I believe, her name is pronounced Heather Langenkamp or Langenkamp.
Plays Nancy.
She plays Nancy. She's the final girl. She's essentially our heroine. She's pretty good throughout, to be fair.
No, there's one of those things where I was thinking, I can't tell if this is her doing this kind of unhinged, sleep deprived, kind of manic performance, or part of it is just being a bit green as an actor.
Yeah, I don't know how old she was, but she seems young. I know she's playing 16,
baby,
18.
Baby face cast.
Yeah. Including Depo himself, big dick face.
Fuck off, Depo.
Johnny Depp. So look, man, let's do can I get a rewind on this, Tom?
You can.
Can you take us back to the beginning and let's talk, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the film, then please just watch it.
Yeah, because, we never really say this on the podcast, but spoilers?
Yeah, I suppose. Although it's not really a twisty film, this one, actually.
Yeah, and also it's been out for 32 years. I think the statute of limitations is passed on this for spoilers. But just watch it, because I'm going to say that, I think up until this point, The Howling one, I think we considered was our best film that we've watched so far in the pod. I think that this is, I would say that this is better.
Yeah, I mean, if you
ask, nothing to take away from The Howling, because that's a strong movie, but this is
my mood. From day to day, I might change my mind, but tonight, right here, right now, so feeling Elm Street One, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, talk us through it, Tom. Take us on a guide.
It kicks off pretty strong. It just drops you straight in with this footage of Freddy Krueger making the razor glove, his four-daggered hand.
That iconic claw. And it's
He's in like a smoke, steam filmed, like boiler room. It's all like this brooding, dark music. It really just like sets the tone right away.
And one of the things that's so great about that iconic claw hand glove that he's got with the razor fingers on it is that it's just so shittily made, not in a way that looks cheap or like bad or like the filmmaker's fucked up. It has the look of like just a desperate guy who's just like, fuck everybody, I don't need to know how to learn to do this properly. I'm just gonna just fucking bash it in and just make it until I've just got this thing that I want.
It's very real world.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing, like if you kind of had the time inclination and were mental enough, you can go and make one of those.
Yeah.
Don't.
Yes, please do not.
That is just no.
Yeah.
Do not do it.
It's like leather straps and like rusty screws and then just these long jagged points of
And yeah, he's making that. And then we get Tina, who is one of the other like main characters. She's walking around this big industrial kind of like warehousey boiler room kind of thing, like in like a very elaborate nightgown, looking kind of like a bit kind of bewildered. She doesn't know where she is.
It's like a music video at this point. There's like smoke and she's backlit and
like a random sheep runs across a hallway just because.
That sheep.
Is Freddy whispering? Is he like whispering Tina? Because he does a lot of that. He loves a whisper.
I can't recall exactly. I think at this point, no, we're just left with the Bernstein score. And I think Tina's walking around going like, hello?
Yeah. And then she's like right by the boiler room. And then Freddy leaps out. Proper Dracula style. Goes for her with his razor claw hands. And then she kind of wakes up in bed. She's like, oh, no. Screaming. And she's got rips down the front of her dress. And that is a strong intro. That's in like the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like it gets... It there's no lull. It's like straight in with kind of like not telling you exactly what's going on, but you're kind of like, okay, I'm on board.
And we don't really, I think, see Freddy Krueger's face or anything during this intro. We don't see his, like, because he's all burned up.
Yeah.
You know, we don't see his hat. I don't even think we really get to see much of like that stripy jumper, that famous stripy jumper. It's just the claw, baby.
Yeah, they tease him out.
And crucially, during the opening credits, it's nice to sort of watch this character as a concept get developed in the public eye, because the opening credits list him as starring Robert Englund as Fred Krueger.
Yes.
Like at a certain point he became Freddy. We all know him as Freddy, but here in the first film they were like, no, it's Fred. Very formal.
Yeah, it's weird because in the film like half the time they call him Fred and half the time they call him Freddy. Like depending on who is talking about him.
Well, Freddy is just obviously better.
He calls himself Freddy.
Yeah.
And then Nancy calls him Freddy, whereas everybody else calls him Fred.
Yeah. It's weird. Yeah. I mean, but I like that. It's cool kind of watching it develop.
And then, so basically, like, Tina, she's up, she's awake, she's scared, she's had this horrible night, she's ripped. She thinks that maybe she's ripped her nightgown.
Yeah, her mum's like, you either need to trim your nails or stop having bad dreams.
Yeah. Yeah, and then her mum goes off to bed with a really gross boyfriend. And then the next day at school, you've got Tina, you've got Nancy, who we've mentioned before. We've got our fucking dickhead, Johnny Depp. Fuck off, Depo.
Dickhead Depo.
And Tina's boyfriend, Rod, who is kind of a greaser.
He's got like a leather
jacket. An 80s equivalent of a greaser, yeah.
He turns up to come and see them and he's like, what's going on here, an orgy or something? And like, he says that to his girlfriend and her mates. Like,
yeah,
don't be a douchebag.
Oh, but he shows up and is like a douchebag from the get. Doesn't he show up and is kind of like, hey, yo, I woke up with a hard-on this morning.
Yeah, he's like, I woke up with a hard-on, it had your name on it. And she's like, Rod, my name's got four letters. There's no way that could fit on your joint. Slam dunk.
But Tina, apart from doing all these dick gags, she is really freaked out by her dream and doesn't want to sleep alone that the next night. So she gets Nancy and Glenn Depo fuck off to come and stay the night. And it seems like they've all had bad dreams as well.
Yeah, yeah, they have.
Everyone's just like, oh man, I had such a bad night's sleep.
Everyone's on edge. And Johnny Depp, fuck off Depo, has like this little gag where he explains to his friends that he's got this one cousin he's allowed to stay with that lives near the airport. And so he has to phone his mom. He's got this sound effects tape with like aeroplane sounds.
Yeah.
And there's all of this like elaborate machinations they have to do to basically have a boy-girl sleepover. And I think that that's kind of a big part of it to an extent, because at this point in the film, yes, Tina has had a bad dream. She doesn't want to sleep alone. That's not reason enough for them all to gather in this house and spend the night. It's kind of just a good excuse for them to... Have a bit of a bone away. Yeah.
Yeah. A gathering, as I think you call it when you're a teenager. It's not a party. It's a gathering. And that is kind of what they're doing right here.
Yeah.
What's his name? Rod, the boyfriend.
The greaser.
The greaser shows up. And he's a fucking mentalist. Like, he basically tackles Fuck Off Depo to the ground and then, like, pulls out, like, a hook from nowhere and just goes, hey, I found this hook here. And then Johnny Depp, Fuck Off Depo, is kind of like, man, you're a right knob, aren't you? And then Rod just pulls out a flick knife and sticks it in his face and is like, what'd you say? And it's just kind of like, these are not reasonable reactions to anything. And then like Rod's just kind of like, hey, I'm just joking. Tina, do you want to go and bone down? And she's like, well, yeah, I mean, you've pulled out two sharp weapons against me and my friends, but yeah. Fucking sounds good.
At any point, he's about to go, grease lightning! Grease lightning! He's the most ridiculous cartoon character.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like he's about to start singing grease lightning and stabbing someone in the neck.
The greased stabbing.
Yeah, it's for the dark, gritty reboot of Grease that they're obviously going to do.
Fuck Off Depo is in his bedroom with Nancy.
Well, no, he's not in the bedroom with Nancy because he tries to bone down with Nancy and she's like, we're not here for that.
She friend zones him so hard.
He's like, we're here to look after Tina. After Tina's just gone to go and look after herself, you know what I'm saying? Her and Rod have gone up to the bedroom and are having very loud, unconvincing sex.
Yeah, it's super awkward.
So much shouting of, oh God! Oh God!
That's going, we are having sex! Until Wes Craven goes, yes, okay, you can stop now.
Yeah, and at which point, Fuck Off Depo, he's like lying next door going, oh God.
You know, Wes Craven in part got his start in filmmaking on porn.
Ooh.
Not under the name Wes Craven, but he's said it in a few interviews that like his first few... experiences on film shoots were on porn. How did he fuck up the sex scene so much?
Yeah, well, fair play to him for getting out of porn. Anyway, Tina's just kind of wandering around outside in her dream or something. She's like walking around the house, but you get that amazing scene of Nancy asleep in her bed. And then the latex wall bit.
So there's just a big white wall above the bed. So her, the wall that faces her head as she sleeps in the bed. And on the set, they've replaced it with just a big bit of latex. And fucking Freddy is behind it. And he's just sort of pushing himself through. They did a very similar thing in the Peter Jackson movie, The Frighteners. If you haven't seen The Frighteners, you've absolutely got to see The Frighteners. That is a banging romp. But it's just this kind of the ghost Freddy. He's not even really a ghost, but just the presence of Freddy is like pressing through the wall and it's kind of morphing and looming over her. And then she just wakes up, snaps back. And then there's like a cut that I can't even remember seeing, but like she goes to bang on the wall and it's solid again.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh my God, it's so good.
And then while this is going on, you're like, Tina is still wandering around like through the house and she goes outside into the alleyway. And this is when we get like our first like proper view of Freddy. And it's weird.
It's weird because he's got big, long, bendy arms the first time we see him.
Yeah, like so she's in this alleyway and he's walking down this really long alley and his arms are like 7 foot wide.
Yeah, yeah. He reaches from one wall to the other and he's like scraping his nails down.
But this is one of the effects in the film that I don't feel has like dated particularly well.
Mm.
But then she's like, oh, okay, well, this isn't good. I'm going to fuck off. And then Freddy starts doing some proper, like, doing the classic, what I'm sure we're going to get a lot of in all these films, the Freddy laugh, chases after her.
Well, he doesn't talk that much in this film, which I'm thankful for. He looks great, brilliant body acting. His lines are few and far between, but when he has them, they're pretty good. So when Tina first sees Freddy with the big, long, bendy arms, she goes, oh my God, or something like that. Yeah. She's like, my God. And he holds up his claw and he goes, this is God.
Yeah, and he chases after a bit. And then, like, he chases after a bit more. And then he pops out behind, like, behind a tree, like something out of a Looney Tunes cartoon. You know, I think you're, like, popping out behind, like, a lamppost that you're too big to actually hide behind. And he goes, hey, check this out. And he cuts off two of his fingers and, like, loads of, like, pus shoots
green
out of them.
Pus shoots out. This is one of my favourite bits in the entire film.
Okay, right.
Where he gleefully chops his fingers off as if he's like sipping a cup of tea. And it's just like,
brilliant!
Which to me is really chilling because I'm like, oh my, like he is insane.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously if he'll happily just chop a couple of his own fingers off, I'm sure he'd have no qualms chopping anything off of me.
And which he doesn't, because he basically slashes Tina's stomach wide open.
Yeah.
And when this is happening, when he gets her, we see it through the eyes of Rod, the boyfriend. So she's asleep in bed next to him, like thrashing around. And he wakes up and sees her stomach kind of split open. And then she's being like dragged onto the ceiling the bedroom, dragging blood everywhere. This is like super brutal because everything in all the scenes before, the chase scenes had very chasey 80s music. And then the music kind of cuts out. It's just like a burn, like just like a drone while she's just writhing around on the ceiling.
And her screaming is so full on.
It's very bloody. And it's just like, that is the bit in the film that is like, oh, fuck. That is nasty.
It's really, really, it's really unpleasant, but it's also really well shot. Just this effect of her kind of like rising out of the bed and slamming into the wall, the gravity going askew, where they've built this room that they can rotate in real world. So she's like slamming against it, but it kind of looks like she's sliding up and onto the ceiling across it. And she's just like screaming her heart out, but it's not like it's not a scream queen scream. It's not a Friday the 13th and then diagonal machete across the face scream. It's just this kind of like the kind of screaming you would do while you're asleep.
It's nightmarish, isn't it?
Oh, it's so good.
And then so that's Tina, who has been presented at the beginning of the film as being like your main girl, fake out, she's dead. Rod goes on the run.
Yep, because obviously it looks like he's slashed her up.
Yeah, thus ensues like manhunt for Rod, carried out by Nancy's dad, cop dad. He's a cop and he's a dad.
He can be two things.
He is cop dad, and he's got to get this guy Rod, who is described by one of the policemen as he's a musician type.
Which I guess to that cop just means leather jacket, but like,
yeah,
because there's no mention of him being in a band, or he doesn't have a bassoon in the back of his car.
It's a very kind of like, I don't know, like late 50s, early 60s, like rock and roll. Oh, he's one of those musician type, you know, like,
yeah, smoking the reefer.
Yeah, it's like you'd have thought like in the 80s, like that maybe would have like, it's like he's one of those what do you call them, teenagers. I'm newfangled teens. He's got no respect.
Meanwhile, Nancy has to carry on with her daily life. She's scared of going to sleep because she's having bad dreams herself. She goes to school and her teacher is the actress Lynn Shay. Now, I had to look her up. She is the old lady in There's Something About Mary, who I think is Mary's landlady or something like that. She's also, you might recognise her from Insidious. a few of those. She's in this very fresh faced as a young idealistic English teacher, and she's leading some preppy guy and reading out a poem in English class. Meanwhile, Nancy falls asleep in English class. She can't help it. She's knackered, mate. Can't you see she's pooped? She's knackered. And one touch that's really cool is the guy that's reading out the poem, when you realise that she's asleep, because he starts whispering it.
Yes.
He switches from reading the poem aloud to being very, and then I wandered lonely as a girl. And everyone's just silent and watching him.
It's good. It's subtle, but it's creepy. And then she sees Tina in a body bag, like a transparent body bag, all doused in blood, just being like, Nancy, Nancy. And then she disappears and she gets dragged down the hallway by an invisible force. Oh, some fucking good imagery in this film, man.
Yeah, really strong.
Yeah, good stuff. And then what happens with it next? So she gets kind of like dragged off. Freddy pops up.
Yeah, so there's a hall monitor girl who's wearing the same jumper that Freddy has. And at first it's a bit of a fake out, but then the hall monitor is like, see you soon. So already they're building on like the iconography of Freddy Krueger. They're like trying to instill in us that the stripy jumper is like a thing we should keep an eye out for, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They've got the stripe. So they already know that they can put a jumper and a claw on any actor or actress. In this case, it's a 16-year-old girl, and it will mean Freddy to us. We've only seen him once in the film so far, and already it's like that strong.
It's just, yes, it's like a strong look. He tries to get her, doesn't quite get her. We've got like Cop Dad is very concerned about Nancy, and Nancy's mum is also concerned. We're introduced to her at this point. They're not together anymore. Nancy's mum is a big old lush. Like, she is drunk off her ass the whole time.
She's got big, like, 3-litre bottles of vodka hidden in every room in the house. She doesn't carry them around with her, but every room she goes in, there's just one, like, stowed away somewhere.
There's a nice bit where they're, like, both talking to her about, like, why were you over at Tina's house and all this kind of stuff. And, like, the mum says to Nancy, well, maybe you just don't take murder seriously, which I thought was kind of an odd line, because who doesn't take murder seriously?
I'll tell you who, Fred Krueger.
Oh, he loves it. He loves it. Rod, musician type, he gets busted by the cops.
Yeah.
They basically tail Nancy, and then he jumps out to Nancy. He's like, I didn't do it. And then they get him. When they arrest him, they find he has his switchblade on him, which doesn't look good for him. Get rid of the fucking switchblade, mate.
Come on.
Put two brain cells together and just be like, well, my girlfriend has just been bloodily murdered. Better hold onto my knife.
I mean, he's not the sharpest tool in the shed.
He is not. So he's been taken in. Fuck off depot, reckons he did it.
Yeah.
Nancy is not so sure.
And in a dream, she gets fuck off depot to look, to like watch over her while she's dreaming, right? She's like, oi, fuck off depot. Can you stay here and like watch over me while I sleep? And then she walks in the dream world to go and look over Rod in the prison cell.
Yes, because she spoke to Rod, and Rod mentioned, like, described basically Freddy to her. And so she's becoming aware that everyone is having the dreams about the same people, and she's starting to figure out that dreams are connected, and the dream world is kind of weird in this, that you don't have a dream. Like, when I have a dream, I don't just like wake up in my bed in the dream and then have to go out and walk around the town to go and find my dream. But they seem to be inhabiting like a dream world version of the town that they live in. So she'll like get up, walk to the police station, sees Freddy there trying to kill Rod in the dream, and then Rod wakes up, and so Freddy chases her, and then she's running away and is trying to get back to fuck off depot to wake him up so that he can wake her up. And it's just weird, everything seems to be positioned in real time in dream world
and geographical space.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder if that is a symptom of Freddy, right, if Freddy is kind of pulling sleepers in the area into his world, right, which is one very specific place, or if the idea is that there just is like a dream world, which is like one second, like an additional
like
layer.
It's a parallel universe.
And that when you fall asleep, you slip into it. Because I don't know about you, I'm going to get, you know, a little metaphysical on you, buddy. Mm-hmm. But when, you know, when I dream, my dreams tend to, they don't have a beginning, right? I don't remember the dream beginning.
No.
I'm in it. I'm like, I'm walking along because I've got to get to a place. I don't necessarily remember where I've been. It's just the thing is already happening. That's my dream.
Yeah.
That's not this. This is very much like it's just like an extra layer on real life where you can, in theory, you should be able to do things and not get hurt, right? Like jump off a building, and that's where you do your flying. That's where you have your naked at school dream. That's where you have your all of those. But there are, when Freddy's there, then there are real world consequences.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, like kind of reminded me a bit after like watching Doctor Strange, that has like those parallel, all these different dimensions, and like the astral plane and all this kind of,
yeah, it's very
all
much that. Like that.
Yeah, it's got that kind of vibe. And, like, you know, like on other series, we would get into Rules Corner. What is the rules of this? But I don't really think, I think because they're dealing in dreams and nightmares, that is fluid and intangible enough that they can kind of, you know, we've got this idea of what the dream world is, but that doesn't, they don't have to explain it, and it doesn't have to stay like that, I feel.
Oh, definitely.
I think that it was smart doing like nightmares as like it's great fodder for horror. But the other thing that I think is really good for like making this seem like a tense and scary film is the whole thing of like trying not to go to sleep, with like Nancy like chugging down coffee and like amphetamine, you know, like stay awake pills and all this kind of shit, stay awake. Because I don't know about you, man, but you know, like when you're just trying desperately to stay, you, I don't know, for whatever reason, you are fading fast and you cannot stay awake. Trying to force that indefinitely
is just horrible.
That would, yeah, like that just seems, that seems like more of a nightmare almost than the nightmare that you're going to have when you fall asleep.
I've missed one night's sleep before, like maximum. Like not once have I ever done that. Like a couple of times I've gone without a single night's sleep, and it's awful.
Yeah,
and she does it for a week. I think that's really, really strong. And if this film was made today, what you'd get a lot more of is playing around with the idea of someone thinking that they're awake and then discovering that they're in a dream, right?
That would
happen all the time. Like you'd get long 15-minute set pieces that then turned out to all be a dream. It was all a dream. And then we'd go back, and then that whole bit would be like, which I hate in horror films. That happens a lot,
yeah,
right?
They kind of play around with it a bit where you're kind of like, you're never sure, like, are they asleep or not? And then it reveals it, but they never fake you out.
They never fake you out, exactly. And so you, I feel like you're always clear when people are awake or not. And it's also, it's not such a bad thing when they are asleep, because again, there are very real consequences. My favorite bit of the whole like freaky shit that happens in the dream world is when Freddy is chasing Nancy home and she's trying to get up to go wake up Fuck Off Depot.
Yeah.
She's running up the stairs in her childhood home, and she's climbing the stairs, which have got this like beige carpet. And every time she puts her foot into one of the stairs, it goes through the stairs, and it's like made out of this like...
It looks like it's made out of marshmallows, like melted marshmallows.
Like these big mozzarella cheese, strings kind of come up when she... And just this kind of... It's so relatable, like trying to climb these stairs and your feet are sinking into them and you're getting all tangled up and the baddie is coming.
Yeah, no, that's very, like... I've had dreams, like, similar to that. That thing of, like, trying to get away from something you can't because something is physically slowing you down.
Yeah.
And so she gets woken up out of this dream, but Freddy still gets robbed, doesn't he? Like he gets killed, he gets hung by Freddy in the jail cell.
He does. I want to call this one of the weaker points of the film, to be honest.
It's not, yeah, that's not the best. There's so many much more iconic bits. Like there's the bit where Nancy falls asleep in the bath. Like that's some scary business.
Yeah, twofold that. So she falls asleep in the bath by accident. She's not trying to sleep or anything, but she just falls asleep. There's this really creepy, like semi-exploitative bit where Freddy's claw comes up out of the water between her legs and starts reaching up to pull her down. That bit's just quite creepy and quite, you know, it's a shot you'd recognize. But then what's great after that is when he pulls her down, like the bathtub is bottomless.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's huge, like in this big black water tank under there, and you can see this tiny little speck of light that she's trying to swim towards.
Mm.
But she's so deep and she's getting all turned around. Oh,
yeah, see, that's good. Like, Rod's death, not so good.
Freddy puts a bed sheet around his neck and just kind of hangs him prison style. Like, it just feels like a bit of a waste of Freddy's abilities, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not the most creative thing. But, like, by now, like, Nancy's going completely nuts. Nancy's mum sends her to, like, a dream doctor, like a dream therapist guy who looks like a bit like a cheap version of Steve Guttenberg. They put some wires on her face, do a bit of monitoring, and then she comes out, like, she has another bad dream and comes out of it with a big gash on her arm and Freddy's hat.
She brought the hat out.
She brought the hat back. It's got Freddy's name written on it. He's written it. It says Fred Krueger in there.
Which is just so cute.
Yeah. And then the mum has to level with Nancy about what's going on.
Now level with us, Mrs. Nancy. What is going on?
So she knows very well who Fred Krueger is. So she's saying that he's a dirty child murderer. And he murdered 20 kids. And then it was like a big news story. She said, like, you know, the lawyers got fat and the judge became a star. But at the end of the day, someone had signed a search warrant wrong. And he went free. So, yeah, like big public media circus about his trial. He gets off free. And then Nancy's mum and a bunch of other parents, basically, they're like, not having that. We're going to fucking nobble him. We're going to burn him. They go and find him in the warehouse, in like the big boiler room.
Yeah.
And they cover it in gasoline, burn the fucker. And then she's like, don't worry. You don't have to worry about Freddy because mommy killed him. Look, I've even got his razor claw hand. And she like pulls out of like the in like something in her basement. She's got a box in the basement. Go, look, here it is. Here's like Freddy Krueger's razor hand. This is a nice thing to hold on to.
It's a cool bit of exposition. This idea that the horrors that you're facing are your parents' fault, right? But that it's also they thought they were helping and they've doomed them.
Yeah. So like Freddy is basically seeking vengeance on the children of the people that killed him.
Mm. So it's not made clear how long ago Nancy's mum killed Freddy. We assume it's sort of when Nancy was a baby or a toddler, like around then, within the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also not made clear, annoyingly, how Freddy has the power to invade people's dreams, right? He was a murderer, he was a serial killer, they killed him. What is special about him to make him come back?
Yeah, it's weird because in Freddy versus Jason, which we've already watched, part of like the big plot in that is that fear of him gives him power.
Mm.
But in this, no one is afraid of him.
Not anymore. They all think he's dead.
Yeah. Obviously, it's kind of like the parents are kind of traumatized. Because I think Cop Dad seems a bit, whenever Fred Krueger is mentioned, he has a bit of a shifty look.
Do you think took part in that killing?
Maybe.
Because they don't really explore that. Because we meet more or less all of the other kids' parents. And there's no like knowing looks between them about Freddy Krueger. Oh, no.
Yeah,
we don't talk about that.
Yeah, like Nancy's mum said it was with a bunch of other parents, but we don't know if it was any of them, do we?
So no. I'm hoping that this is the kind of stuff that they'll go. Maybe not in the sequels, but possibly in the remake. I imagine that the backstory will be quite heavily fleshed out in that.
Yeah, but well, time is going to tell. But so then Nancy starts swatting up on home survival and like booby traps because like she, I think she's just like, I'm gonna have to, she realizes that she's gonna have to deal with this herself. Her mum goes a bit loopy and puts loads of bars on all the windows in the house because she's like, you just need to go to sleep. Freddy's gone. Don't worry about it. And then fucking Johnny Depp, Depot, he falls asleep wearing a really tight crop top.
Yeah, the ends just above his belly button.
Sick top, dude. He falls asleep just after he has his very awkward conversation with his mum. He's like lying on the bed.
He's got the TV on his stomach, like right there on his stomach. It's like a weird wireless battery powered TV.
Mm.
His mum's like, you gotta go to bed. He's like, no. Miss Nude America's on, and I'm listening to music while watching the TV. And she's like, well, you're gonna watch Miss Nude America. If you listen to music, how will you be able to hear what she has to say? And he's like, who cares what she has to say?
It's a very, I mean, that is not a conversation that a teenage boy should be having with his mum.
Is she going to, like, throw a box of Kleenex at him and be like, well, have fun, son?
Yeah, I know. It's like, don't keep me up. Yeah, that was creepy. So, thankfully, fuck off Depot, big old twat bag Johnny, he gets killed. Freddy sucks him into the bed and turns him into a fountain of blood. It's another iconic scene. Couldn't happen to a nicer bloke.
Yeah, it's so good. Like, just this spurt of blood that, again, they make good use of their like upside down twisty turny bedroom set, and it just like blasts out onto the ceiling. Super strong, 10 out of 10 blood blasting scene. Would murder again.
Yeah
that's my Yelp review of that murder.
I like it, it's good. And then Nancy's like, right, that's it, I'm gonna have to go in and deal with this fucker.
Well, before that, she has get this one amazing bit.
My favourite bit of the film. How did I nearly forget this?
Before we watched the film, Tom was like, I really love this scene. Because, you know, we've both seen it before. He's like, you know that scene? You know that coffee machine scene? Love that scene. And then about 10 minutes before it happened, Tom was like, coffee machine scene's coming up in a minute. It's going to be good. And then the scene started and Tom went, oh, this is the coffee machine scene. And then the coffee machine happened and Tom went, ha! And then the next scene started and Tom went, love that coffee machine scene. So the scene is Nancy's in bed and her mum is like, look, you're going to get some fucking sleep, right? You know what's good for you, you're going to get some sleep. And Nancy's not yet committed to the idea of going to sleep. She's like, She's a bit reluctant. She's like, fine, I'm going to try, mum. But we know that she won't.
Mm.
The mum is then like, right, okay. So you've had enough coffee. I'm going to take your coffee cup away. Good night. Turn out the lights. Fucking go to bed. Get some sleep. Closes the door.
But she picks up like two coffee cups, a bottle of pills, and like the whole, you know, like on a drip, you know, like an American kind of like filter coffee, like the big urn that it all goes in. One of those. There are so many coffee, so much coffee paraphernalia in her room.
She's a barista.
Yeah, she's like fucking like arms full of coffee shit. Good night. Closes the door. What does Nancy do?
Nancy gets her secret backup coffee machine out, which was already switched on.
You can see the fucking red light on it.
Yeah, full of steaming hot fresh Java, and it was right it was next to where her mum was crouching, just like not hidden really, just it was
under
there.
Her nose. It's just, and it's massive.
Yeah. It's like, she's like a child hiding an extra bar of chocolate under the pillow or something.
Yeah,
but like this whole big coffee machines make noise.
I know, and also, like, where did she get this other coffee machine from anyway? Because the mum obviously took out, like, the jar for another coffee. How many coffee machines do they have in that house? Like, that's her secret, kind of, like, under the... You have to see it to really get it, folks, but it's fucking great. It's, like, one of the best bits in the film. After that, then Nancy is like, well, I've had a steaming hot cup of Java. Better go kill this Freddy Krueger guy.
And she goes in. She
tells her dad, come and get me in 20 minutes. I'm going to bed. She then spends 10 minutes booby trapping her entire house with shit she's learned from this book. I am very impressed with how quickly, like, one of these things involves like mounting a sledgehammer to a door frame and like rigging it to like a tripwire.
One of them is like drilling a minute hole in the glass of a light bulb so she could fill it with gunpowder.
Yeah, from all these shotgun cartridges that she has. Like, why?
She does all this in 10 minutes. That is some next level Home Alone shit.
I know. It's crazy ass Home Alone shit. And also just like, mate, 10 minutes, I could probably hang one picture. How does she manage to do all of this shit?
Because of all that coffee she's been drinking, man. She is buzzing.
Oh, it's like in Futurama when Fry drinks 100 cups of coffee and suddenly time slows down. And I see she's existing on like a different level to us. Yeah, so she goes in to go and find Big Freddy.
Yeah, and they have like not the most memorable run-in. Like she goes into the boiler room or the house or something, and they have a bit of a kerfuffle, but the most important thing is that before her alarm goes off, she runs at him, rugby tackles him, grabs him, pulls him into the real.
Yeah, because she wakes up holding on to him.
Yeah.
And then it gets a bit more interesting. Then it gets very Home Alone, where Freddy's now in the real world and he can be hurt, and so he gets like a sledgehammer in the dick.
Yeah.
He gets blown up.
He gets set on fire. This bit's really scary because he's full body on fire chasing her up the stairs. That's like pretty strong.
Nancy goes and like smashes out all the windows in the house and is shouting at the police across the street at Fuck Off Depot's house because they're investigating why he got turned into a fountain of blood. And she's in there kind of like, he's trying to kill me. Get my dad. There's fucking smoke coming out of the house. The cop is stood on the other side of the street going, I wonder if I should tell the chief about this. It's kind of like, okay. Come on, dude. You're not getting your Christmas bonus.
I feel like this is probably in the textbook.
Yeah. Someone shouting murder. You should probably at least go and have a look. And they go in and they find these flaming footprints from the basement upstairs. Like, it looks really cool. All these burning footprints. And, then she's like, Nancy, like, fuck, he's gone after Mum. And you find Freddy like just like throttling the mother on the bed. He's still on fire.
Oh, it's so good. Because don't forget, the mum took part in burning Freddy to death all those years ago.
Yeah, and then you see her charred body disappear into like this black netherworld through the bed sheets, and then the bed just turns back to normal, and then she's gone.
Yeah.
And then Nancy's like in pieces. Cop dad he's like, oh my God, what's happened? Cop dad walks off, and then Nancy's alone in the room. And then Freddy's back, and he's like, you didn't think you could get away from me. I'm going to kill you. And then she turns her back on him. And it's a bit of a harking back to something old Depo was saying about people taking control of their dreams and not giving their dreams power, like turning your back on the monster in your dream because it's your dream. You're the one giving it energy. And she turns her back and is like, no, I want my mum back. I want my friends back. I take back all the energy I've given you. Then Freddy's kind of like, what? No. And then he disappears.
Disappears into like a ball of lightning. And then Nancy walks through the door and out into bright, blazing Ohio sunshine.
Oh, yeah, this is meant to be set in Ohio. There are so many fucking palm trees. I don't think that's what Ohio looks like. It looks like it's California.
Yeah, I have been to Ohio, and that was not my memory of Cleveland.
Yeah. But they come out on, like, it's a beautiful sunny day, but it's foggy. Mum's alive. Fuck Off Depot pulls up in a car.
The mum announces she's decided
with Tina
to quit
and
drinking.
Rod. Yeah, yeah.
Like, everything's good. Everyone's
all right. And they get in the car, and then the sun, it's like this like proper like American like muscle car. It's like the kind of car like the Beach Boys write songs about. And then like the top, like the soft top, like pops up over the sunroof, pops over, and it's stripy red and green.
Freddy has apparently turned into a car now.
Yeah. The doors lock, and they also goes, Mum. The mum's there going, laughing and smiling. She doesn't know what's going on because she's still pissed, really. And the car drives off. We assume that, well, they're dead. And then Freddy's hand fucking smashes through the window of the front door and drags the mum in. Q cue awesome nightmare song. That's the movie.
It's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
That ending, do you think that, because I keep coming back to the fact that when Freddy killed the mum, she disappeared, like, she disappeared, right? Her body was sucked into the bed. Same as what happened to Fuck Off Depo.
Yeah.
He was also sucked into the bed. Is that, does that mean they were where did their bodies go? Did they go into Freddy's dream world? And,
yeah,
an additional question to that, a supporting question, when Nancy turns her back on Freddy and he disappears, where does he go? Do they all go to this dream world? And then is it that in Nancy, when she was sort of saying, oh, I want them back, I want my mum back, I want everybody back, the only kind of real option there was for her to, the only way that she could get them back was for her to cross through into that dream world herself, and she just doesn't realise she's done it?
If they're dead, then they're dead.
Yeah, and I think the film is clear that they are dead. And I think the film is fairly clear that the ending is a dream.
So it's weird that she's like, I take back all of your power, I'm not in, and, you know, like, you have no more power over me. Freddy is defeated to instantly get them in a dream. That, it feels like there should have been another scene in there. You know what I mean? To put a bit of space between Freddy's defeat and him coming back in a dream, because it seems like, well, why did he go, no, and disappear if he then instantly got her in the next scene?
Well, maybe that bit was the fake out, him going, no. Maybe that was the fake out. He had full power all along. Like, you can't beat him that easily just by turning your back on him.
Yeah.
Of course, Fuck Off Depo is not going to get it right, is he? Like, the info he gives her is going to be fucking rubbish.
Yeah.
So she does what he says. Freddy's like, oh, okay, this is going to be fun. And he goes, no, and then disappears to lull her into a false sense of security. And I think it's clear that the instant that she walks through that door and out into the blazing, foggy Ohio sunshine, she's dead. Like, she's dead from the moment that she walks through that door. And that's why everyone else that's there with her, we have seen die before. They're all dead. The question is, are they in Freddy's world where he just gets to constantly murder them again and again?
Yeah.
Is this some kind of afterlife? Oh, food for thought.
Food for thought there. But all in all, that was tip top.
That was a dreamy film.
Oh, yes.
And listeners, I am keen to hear your thoughts on the film we've just watched and the film we're about to watch. As always, thank you for listening to the Bitter End podcast. If you've got any questions, if you want to tell us your interpretation of that ending, if you want to share your memories of watching it for the first time, you can always drop us a line. We're on Twitter at Bitter End Pod. We're on Facebook at Bitter End Pod.
That all said, we better go off to sleep, Todd. Hope I don't have any nightmares.
It's all right, because I've got this massive pot of coffee under the table.
Oh,
here.
Fucking great. Okay, well, let's just stay up and watch some more silly films.
Hooray!